Dave Moore on Today FM podcast.
It's Today FM. It's Dave Moore, and I've got Alan Quinlan with me. Alan, we're down to the end of the Six Nations campaign, and I hate to be that guy, but isn't it pretty much already in the bag?
Oh God, we should be very careful, Dave. There's a lot of questions about Irish rugby pundits and Irish rugby fans getting ahead of themselves last weekend. When Ireland went to Twickenham. I can safely say that, well, unless somebody can produce some audio that I completely wrote England off and said it can't happen. I was one of them who was cautious. But on the basis of what we had seen from England in recent times, you know, the evidence was there that Ireland were playing a lot better rugby, more attacking brand of rugby. But the danger was always going to be there, you know. So, look, I think, you can celebrate the Irish success and great start. I think the last two years has been, bar the World Cup, I suppose, and they're the crunch matches. That was the crunch match against New Zealand and also on Twickenham last week. But consistently, they've been playing superb rugby. And
Do you think that's a little bit of, I don't know, maybe a mental hang-up that the Irish team has, that when it comes to these crunch games, I mean, like, because I fully believe that, look, we could even lose the game on Saturday and still, you know, win the Six Nations. But, you know, when it comes to this game against England, when it comes to the big game against New Zealand, why are we not able to exercise ourselves as the world number one or the best team in the Six Nations and get over the line?
It's a really intriguing one, and I think if I had the answer, I think I'd make some money out of it.
Yeah.
Look, I think ultimately, historically, Ireland had this kind of mantra of passion and kick the ball up in the air and real underdog status. And, you know, we would have success and get wins and win trophies. The whole thing is completely flipped to, you know, loads of expectation and loads of excitement. And in reality, having a team in recent times that, you know, were good enough to win a World Cup, are good enough to win championships. No other team has won back-to-back Grand Slams in the modern era. So we were in that position up to last Saturday. So maybe it's just down to maybe a bit of pressure and the opposition you play against, and that is sport at all levels. I think so far it's been really positive up to last week.
Transition, yeah.
But I think the next step for them is Andy Farrell is going to be there till the next World Cup, is trying to obviously learn from those experiences. And look, people can agree or disagree with me, Dave. The reality is, Ireland probably shouldn't be winning World Cups in any sport.
Absolutely, yeah.
Because we're a very small nation, and you look at the amount of South African players that are actually playing outside of South Africa, let alone the number of players that are there, the amount that they can choose from. I think he nearly got it all right, Andy Farrell, in assembling a team and a group and the build-up to the World Cup. And, you know, they were probably one Ron Kelleher and Jordy Barrett, one situation of going into a semi-final, and realistically, you know, they would have beaten Argentina. They would have been in a final, and I think that would have been just a phenomenal situation. So I think Andy Farrell has done a great job, and he's practical and understands that sport. But look, I'm sure they would have been absolutely devastated by last week, and I'm frustrated as well.
And I'm sure they'll now be motivated to do whatever it takes.
But if they back it up this week and play really poorly, then you got to start questioning and
but they
critiquing
won't.
More.
I mean, I would
probably
have
questioning some players and changes needed and all that kind of stuff. And that's just the nature of sport.
But you'd be confident going into this that the lads will do what needs to be done, and that we'll do what we need to do against Scotland, and the Six Nations will be ours.
Yeah, I think it's probably, it'll refocus them all and probably drive that bit of
hunger,
that bit of a spark that they need, and hunger. Scotland are obviously very dangerous. Like, they were beaten in Rome last week, and I often say to people who criticize the rugby team, well, just look at Wales and Scotland and the inconsistencies they've had for the last number of years. So, you know, I think it's, the Irish team has done really well. If they win the championship, well, it's not to be sniffed at, really, you know, after winning Grand Slam last year. If they can, hopefully they can learn from those experiences. Again, it's a harsh lesson, particularly the World Cup one. I think I said after the win in Marseille, I would have taken a 50-point drubbing against France that night for a 1 point win against New Zealand in the quarterfinals.
Yeah, absolutely. You know? Yeah, so different kettle of fish.
Alan, I'm intrigued by the art of co-commentary, right? And I'm going to ask you some stuff about this if you're cool with that. But yourself and Dave McIntyre on Virgin Media do an amazing job. But I'm just always wondering, like, the little details, the little nuances. Like, when you see commentators with their big page of notes, you know, and they have all the details of the players and all the previous results and previous... Do you need to have any of that as a co-commentator, or are you primarily focusing on the live action in front of you?
No, I would always have a lot of notes done before games, and I'd go through even teams that I'd be very familiar with. I'd write out all my teams in A4 pages, and I'd have a folder that would have both 23 players, little notes on each one. Mm. Just in case there's a stoppage in game or you need to know something about an individual, I know primarily that the lead commentator needs to know the stats about when they last won and historical stuff about teams and stuff like that. But I would always try and understand as much of that as I can myself, yeah, and prepare accordingly. Results, players who, you know, some player might have got a hat-trick of tries 3 years ago in a club game. It's good to know those kind of things. You may never use them. So I would always prepare like that.
Yeah, they always kind of, they might inform the overall conversation you have because you know the things in the back of your head.
People would often say to me, God, you're off to Marseille on the weekend, and are you going to the UK or something? You'll have great crack. I don't even go outside the door on a Friday night.
It's just work.
A game.
Yeah, yeah.
Well,
yeah.
No, I'd always try and prepare in a sense. Yeah. I wouldn't be comfortable. Because I'd have a certain level of anxiety in me anyway. I wouldn't be able to relax and probably sleep well on the Friday night until I had all my kind of notes and information done. When you do the commentary, really, it's kind of like, for the lead commentator, and this is the way I probably look at it, is you know, he opens the show. He opens the curtain and introduces, welcomes the audience. And then once the show starts, we try and talk through it. It's a privileged job. I don't always get it right, but I do. I do feel that I'm some way part of the game.
Yeah.
People often ask me, do I want to be in studio or would I rather commentary? I love doing the commentary because I feel I'm somewhat part of the game.
And you can tell, yeah. You can tell you're enjoying it. Actually, talk to me about the situation in one of the last games where we could hear you say, can you hear me, Stuart? Obviously, one of the technically something was going wrong somewhere. So what was the crack with that one?
Well, you're only one comment away from your career ending.
Oh, I do live radio 3 hours a day. I know exactly what you mean, Gwynnie.
The blood drained out of my body that day. That was against Italy. And, you know, when we're the hosts, broadcaster at the Aviva Stadium, I would choose the player of the match. You get the director would cue you in your ear. So basically he'd speak into your headphones and say, look, and 65 minutes, 70 minutes, who are you thinking about possibly? He cued me, Stuart from Virgin Media, and he was the director, and he was asking me for an indication because he's then got to let the world feed commentary know. I pressed to answer him back. I pressed the button, which is a mute button, essentially, that I can talk back to him and the audience don't hear me at home. And that obviously wasn't working. So I was there, Stuart, can you hear me, Stuart? Can you hear me? And then, who are you thinking? I was like, well, James Lowe, I think, and there's a few other players just gone off. Dan Sheehan was gone off. He'd scored two tries, and he nearly got a third. And I was saying, I can't really give it to him. And yeah, the audience heard. And and then I heard one of the lads from another producer or director just cueing me to say, stop talking. And then I just knew something wasn't
something
right
wasn't
here.
Right. Yeah.
Wasn't right. So everybody could hear me at home, and I got loads of text messages and stuff afterwards. So,
well, as you said, at least that was all you were saying. You know.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, look, that's
plenty
the pressure.
Of other things. It is the pressure.
There is a
fair
bit of pressure with it.
Well, listen, before I let you go, Alan, I'm going to ask you my quick fire round of questions I ask everyone who I have on. The first thing is, what are you currently obsessed with?
I'd love to say golf, but I haven't played enough in the last while. Probably obsessed with food, really. Yeah. That's always been the case. I just love my food.
Who's the most famous person in that phone of yours?
Oh my God. I was hoping to say who's the most famous person you ever met.
Well, go on, sure, tell me that.
That was James Bond over in Italy a couple of years ago.
Daniel Craig.
Daniel Craig, yeah, I met him, had a good chat with him. He was at an England rugby match. I was doing the commentary, Italy-England, I think 4 or 5 years ago. And he was there on the sideline. They ended up chatting to him for a few minutes and got a picture. So
that's cool.
Hopefully
that's cool.
That answer will do.
Oh, that'll definitely do. That'll definitely do. Go back to when you were about 8 years old, you were in second class. What national school were you in?
the Monastery CBS in Tipperary Town.
Tiptown, right. And did you have a lunchbox? Did you bring a lunchbox to school?
I did,
What was in it? What was Quinny eating at 8 years old? Steak and chips?
No, probably a couple of a scone or a ham sandwich or something like that, which my mum would have made.
Yeah.
Probably something like that. And
any treats?
Maybe a club milk or something. Do you remember the yellow club milks?
I loved them. Yeah, absolutely delicious.
Yeah. Not every day, only on some days.
All right.
We got lucky.
All right. The final question I'll ask everybody is, and we'll take rugby and having filthy knees after scrumming out of this. Do you wash your legs in the shower, Alan Quinlan?
Absolutely. So why would you have a shower if you didn't wash your legs?
Because I don't. I have a shower every day and I never wash my legs.
Just the water kind of.
Yeah, it doesn't.
I scrub everywhere between my toes and the whole shooting match. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Fair play to you. Come here. We look forward to hearing the co-commentary of Ireland's hopeful victory against Scotland at the weekend, and we'll lift that Six Nations trophy. Alan, thank you so much for joining me today.
My pleasure. Thanks, Dave.
All the best, Quinny. See you.
Dave Moore on Today FM Podcast.